DW Africa Link.
It's Monday, April the 8th. Hello and a very warm welcome to DW's Africa Link program. I am Zipporah Nyambura.
And my name is Eunice Wanjiru. Remember, we are also live on our Facebook page, that's DW Africa, and also on our partner radio stations across Africa.
Coming up, Rwandan president says he will not tolerate any threats to destabilize his country.
Those who think we have not seen enough of a mess and want to mess with us, whether they are from here or from outside, I want to say we mess up with them big time.
7 protesters killed since Saturday in anti-government demos in Sudan. The demonstrators call on the army to urge President al-Bashir to step down as reports of divided military emerge.
The military is very diverse. The security forces and the military are the biggest employers in Sudan. Like all players, the military mirrors Sudan's society.
Also on the program, Libyan airport authorities suspend flights amid clashes between rival forces.
These are some of the stories that we've lined up for you, but first, some world news in brief.
DW News.
I'm Kai Dombach with the DW News. At least 35 people have been killed in clashes between Libyan government loyalists and pro-Khalifa Haftar forces in weekend fighting. Tripoli's lone functioning airport was forced to close after it was hit by an air raid on Monday after UN-backed ceasefire failed. Federica Mogherini, the High Representative of the European Union for Foreign Affairs, wants residents to be evacuated from Tripoli and wants an end to the violence.
I think the first message we need to pass united is the full implementation of the humanitarian truce to allow the civilians and the wounded to be evacuated from the city and to avoid any further military action and any further military escalation and the return to the political negotiations and the political track.
Sudanese security forces fired tear gas and rubber bullets at anti-government protesters outside the army's headquarters in Khartoum on Monday. Thousands of people have been demonstrating outside of the military complex throughout the weekend, calling on President Omar al-Bashir to step down. Sudan's interior minister said that 2,500 protesters were arrested and 7 protesters died in the weekend protests. German exports fell by 1.3% in February compared with the month before, according to the Federal Statistics Office. That is the largest drop in export revenue for a year. Economists say that uncertainty surrounding the UK's exit from the European Union, as well as the ongoing trade dispute between the US and China, were weighing on economies around the world, including Germany. This news comes to you from Deutsche Welle, Germany's international public broadcaster. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and his chief challenger Benny Gantz are making their final appeals to voters ahead of the country's parliamentary elections. Netanyahu is seeking his fifth term in office, which will make him Israel's longest ever serving leader. But Gantz's blue and white party has moved ahead in the polls on the eve of the election. The United States has labeled the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps, a parallel military alongside Iran's armed forces, as a foreign terrorist group. This is the first time that the U.S. has labeled a part of another government as foreign terrorist organization. U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo said that all banks and businesses associated with the group need to sever ties.
Businesses and banks around the world now have a clearer duty to ensure that companies with which they conduct financial transactions are not connected to the IRGC in any material way.
Iranian lawmakers said that Iran would reciprocate the actions. And in sports, Bayern Munich defeated Borussia Dortmund 5-0 in the 100th edition of Der Klassiker. With the result, Bayern leads the league by 1 point with 6 matches remaining. Also, the matchups for the DFB Pokal semifinals were announced. Werder Bremen will host Bayern Munich and Hamburger SV will play RB Leipzig later this month. For more news and information, please visit our website at dw.com. I'm Kai Dombach.
This is Africa Link program coming to you live from our studios here in Bonn, Germany. I'm Eunice Wanjiru.
And I'm Zipporah Nyambura. Thank you to all of you listening to us there on our Facebook Live, DW Africa. And you have many more listening on our radio partner stations. I have to mention some of your names. Ronald Goba says, I have done that, and he's saying you are the best. Thank you. And we have one more comment from someone who is listening all the way from Libya here. El Habib Sadi says he's watching, and Prosperity Jane say hello, DW Africa. Thank you very much. Please remember we are waiting for your comments and your input on these stories. And don't forget to share this audio.
Very true. Now, we begin the program in Rwanda, where President Paul Kagame has this Monday once again reiterated that he will not tolerate any threats, whether international or regional, to destabilize his country.
The latest remarks come hot on the heels of yet another stern warning he made during the 25th commemoration of the genocide against the Tutsi that was attended by dignitaries from all over the world. From Kigali, Isaac Mugabe sent this report.
What began as a somber commemoration of victims of the 1994 genocide later turned out to be an opportunity for President Kagame, who is known not to mince his words when confronted with tough times. In the presence of international guests like the President of the European Commission, Jean-Claude Juncker, the Belgian Prime Minister Charles Michel, among others, Kagame vented out his anger, as was expected, at political rivals to prove that he was a force to be reckoned with.
Those who think we have not seen enough of a mess and want to mess with us, whether they are from here or from outside, I want to say we will mess up with them big time. So that's about the fighting spirit that is alive in us.
Reading between lines, many observers present read his warning as one that is directed to his neighbors, that is Burundi's President Pierre Nkurunziza and Uganda's Yoweri Museveni. Until now, Rwanda's borders and her neighbors, Uganda, remain closed, with no Rwandan national allowed to cross into Uganda and no goods from the Ugandan side allowed into Rwanda. Pressed on this Monday whether the bad blood between Rwanda and her neighbors is the reason why no East African leader attended the commemoration like in the past years, Kagame downplayed such fears.
Well, I think that is the problem that I believe will also come to pass. There will always be problems between one country and another of a different magnitude. Yes, there is a discomfort or some problems we have to address between us and Uganda.
Former colonial ruler Belgium sent Prime Minister Charles Michel, who said that his country would take responsibility for the past.
Faut le dire, ce génocide est aussi l'échec.
It must be said, this genocide is also the failure of the international community, which could not prevent, which could not counter, which could not stop these crimes against humanity. And I stand before you on behalf of a country that also wants to take responsibility straight in the eyes for its part in history.
Notably absent, though expected, was French President Emmanuel Macron, whose presence would have helped to ease the tensions between his country and Rwanda.
Isaac Mugabe there in Rwanda. Now, Zippy, we actually put this story on our page and we asked the question, do you think the international community learned any lessons from the Rwandan genocide? We have some comments there. Segun Mide says, the international community hasn't learned any feasible thing from the Rwandan incident. The world leaders need to be sincere and get proactive if they want history to bless them.
That's a good one. Tiananmen Square commenting there says, hypocrite of the first order for repeating the same genocide in southern Cameroon now.
And Simeon Favor is saying, you are calling the people who want to reduce your population by all means to come and help you stop killing yourselves. You must be insane if you're reasoning in that direction. That's a strong comment there.
You can also give us your comment right there on DW Africa. Move on now to Sudan, where hundreds of thousands of protesters peacefully protested the rule of President Omar al-Bashir in the capital, Khartoum. The city, in which counted almost 1 million people and was held at the capital's army headquarters, took place in the presence of heavily armed security forces and riot police.
According to Sudan's interior minister, 7 protesters have been killed since Friday, including 6 in the state of Khartoum, when security forces dispersed anti-government demonstrations. My colleague Christine Mhundwa has more.
Yes, yes, yes.
Protesters marched onto the army headquarters, chanting slogans to encourage them to help overthrow al-Bashir's government. They held placards reading, "The army and the people are one," and "One army is unity." The mass sit-in comes a day after security forces killed at least four people during a similar anti-government protest. One demonstrator was killed and several others arrested over the weekend. In retaliation, the army fired tear gas. But there are some reports some tried to shield protesters, raising questions of a divided military. Tobias Simon, who has served as a journalist in the region for years, believes there is more to tell from these.
The military is very diverse. The security forces and the military are the biggest employers in Sudan. I find it difficult to say the military has a certain ideology. Like all players, the military mirrors Sudan's society.
The protests have intensified since Friday to mark the 34th anniversary of the coup that overthrew the regime of former President Jafar Nimeiri. Women have also taken a leading role in the protests. Sudan has seen ongoing protests since December last year, when a sharp hike in bread and fuel prices caused a public outcry.
Christine Muhundwa there with that story. Now we head on to Libya, where at least 35 people have been killed and 80 wounded as fighting continues between government forces and Libyan militia chief Khalifa Haftar. General Haftar's Libyan National Army, the LNA, started a military campaign on Thursday, taking over the capital, Tripoli. But government forces today launched a counter-attack.
The violence has seen Libya's only functioning airport closed due to airstrikes and further thrown into disarray a UN plan for talks on elections as a way out of the anarchy. Sela Oneko has more.
Demonstrators took to the streets after reports that forces under General Khalifa Haftar were advancing from the east with the aim of taking over the capital, Tripoli. On Monday, the Libyan government launched a counterattack to defend the capital as the violence claimed more casualties. The United Nations' repeated call for Libya's warring parties to observe a temporary humanitarian truce fell on deaf ears as fighting continued. The European Union's foreign policy chief, Federica Mogherini, also said that the EU is supporting the G7's call for the military commander to stop his advance on Tripoli and seek negotiations.
I think the first message we need to pass united is full implementation of the humanitarian truce to allow the civilians and the wounded to be evacuated from the city and to avoid any further military action and any further military escalation and the return to the political negotiations and the political track. I think Europeans will be united on these messages today, as we have been during the G7 works in the UN Security Council and in the previous days in our work with the Arab League, with the African Union and with the UN.
Russia has called on all sides to reject actions that could provoke bloodshed and the deaths of more civilians. France, on the other hand, has denied that they were aware of Haftar's move and are calling on warring sides to hold peace talks, a call that was echoed by US Secretary of State Mike Pompeo. Libya has been wrecked by violence and unrest since longtime ruler Muammar Gaddafi was deposed and killed in 2011 by NATO-backed forces.
Thank you, Sela Oneko, for that report.
Now, I can see here someone called Prosperity J on our Facebook page. She's saying al-Bashir do the right thing and resign.
Yes, of course, we're very happy to get your input and your comments there on our Facebook page. And we have Samson Yaula, who says he's watching all the way from Maryland, USA. And we have Che Leona says he's talking about President Paul Biya. And he says, I know President Paul Biya of Cameroon is watching.
And someone also here, Ishmael Saliu Koroma, he's saying he admires Rwanda a lot. May your past history may it not repeat itself. This is also on our top story from Rwanda.
Thank you very much. Remember, you can find all these and more on our page, dw.com.
case you've just tuned in, you're listening to DW's Africa Link program, coming to you live from our studios here in Bonn, Germany. My name is Eunice Wanjiru.
And I'm Zipporah Nyamura. And thank you to all of you listening to us on our Facebook page. Please don't forget to share this audio.
Now, coming up in the next 15 minutes, Cameroon repatriates Nigerians who had fled their country in fear of possible election violence.
The elections ended well and they are going back to their country escorted by our military.
And you're also asking, why is it difficult to bring the Ebola outbreak in the DRC under control? We will find out a little later, plus a sports update.
But first we head to Cameroon. According to the governor of the country's far north region, about 40,000 Nigerians who had crossed over to Cameroon before their country's election in February have returned home.
They had fled the country fearing that the elections would turn violent. Many others will be accompanied to the border in the coming weeks with protection from the authorities on both sides. From Makari, Cameroon's northern border with Nigeria, Moki Kinzeka reports.
Cameroon troops whistle to indicate it is time for the departure of 3,000 Nigerians from the town of Makari to the Nigerian border town of Kukawa in the northeastern state of Borno. Apollonia Ndukong represents the government of Cameroon. He said the Nigerians will be handed over to their authorities at the border.
We are working with the Nigerian authorities, actually, because they have a squad that protects. So they want us to report on any events that are taking place so that they make sure that they provide the necessary protection and the security services that are necessary.
The Nigerians living Cameroon are part of about 60,000 others who crossed over to Cameroon before their country's February 23 general elections. According to Mijiyawa Bakari, governor of Cameroon's far north region, they fled, fearing that violence would erupt.
Avec les élections présidentielles, sénatoriales.
Ahead of the Nigerian presidential and senatorial elections, some citizens cross over from the neighboring country to Cameroon. Within a week, we had counted more than 40,000 Nigerians, and so we deployed our security forces to protect them. The elections ended well, and they are going back to their country escorted by our military. I have instructed administrative officials to do a head count of those who are still in Cameroon.
Exhaustif de la situation de ceux qui sont restés.
Nigerians like Nelson Chidi, a 35-year-old businessman from Maiduguri, said they hope their president-elect will fulfill his electoral promises. Chidi especially hopes that President Muhammadu Buhari would put a stop to Boko Haram terrorism.
His Excellency Buhari, we were crying for the past government that things are too hard. But since Buhari entered there, it has become worse. You can see Boko Haram, people are dying, innocent people are dying for the crime they have never committed. People are not living well. You see Nigerians, they are not having light. Why our neighboring countries have light? Our people are suffering. It's because of bad government.
Christian Anye, who teaches at a private school in Kukawa, said he expects Buhari to tackle joblessness.
My president Buhari, give work to the youth. You cannot go to school after you don't have work. That's what's causing problem. I cannot accept you as my president, or I call you my president. Why are you not satisfying me as a citizen? Let there be calm.
Besides the Nigerians who crossed to Cameroon thinking that the general elections in their country would end in chaos, the UNHCR reports that over 30,000 men, women and children from the Nigerian town of Ran have also been fleeing attacks from Boko Haram.
Moki Kinzeka with that report. And of course, very strong input from the people talking in their units. They are saying joblessness and other issues are pushing them away.
Indeed, it is. And also, like we had, the UNHCR is talking about people fleeing Boko Haram. So it is actually an issue. And there are some people who really don't want to go back because they're fearing that, you know, they'll be chased away by Boko Haram. So it's a big issue there.
Yeah. Remember, you can also comment by joining there and leaving your comments on DW Africa.
Health check.
And just as you heard, we now talk about health matters. It's been 8 months since the start of the current Ebola outbreak in the Democratic Republic of Congo.
And according to the World Health Organization, 8 new cases have been reported today. There are now over 1,000 in total. Why is it so hard to bring the outbreak under control? Anna Hearn with more.
The Ebola outbreak is wreaking havoc in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo, specifically in the Ituri and North Kivu provinces. Because of insecurity, it is hard to bring the outbreak under control, according to Tarek Yazarevich from the World Health Organization.
We have been saying this since the beginning of this outbreak in August last year, that this is a particularly difficult situation because we have an outbreak of a deadly disease in an area with active conflict, with a number of armed groups, with number of issues that have been in the area for a long time, and basically community that was already suffering from a lack of services, from insecurity, was confronted with another layer of complexity and the fear of Ebola.
Besides the risk of being attacked by armed groups, another challenge is the growing risk of fatigue among the healthcare workers as the outbreak continues to evolve with no end in sight. They are being pushed to the edge, working long hours under very tiring circumstances. Another major obstacle, says Yazarevich, has been the community resistance for health interventions and mistrust of the healthcare workforce.
It takes time to engage the community, although DR Congo had previous 9 outbreaks of Ebola. This time, outbreak happened for the first time in this particular area in North Kivu. So we had to explain to the populations what are the measures, what is the advice that is being given, how we can prevent further spread, that people who are sick should be treated in the treatment centers and not stay in a community. So all these messages had to be given to the population who didn't know about Ebola and who had a mistrust toward authorities in several occasions and several areas. And obviously this slowed down the response, coupled with the instances of violence where our teams were unable to go where they needed to go and when they needed to go.
To date, no case of Ebola has been reported beyond the borders of the Democratic Republic of Congo. Still, the WHO has one big fear, that people who are on the move within Congo may carry the virus across the border to neighboring countries. In case that happens, the World Health Organization would have to put measures in place in different locations. That, says Yazarevich, would overstretch his organization's capacities. An end to the outbreak is not in sight. The WHO still remains in the affected areas, constantly battling the virus.
Anna Hearn there reporting.
Make your voice count. Join DW Africa on Facebook and comment on the stories there. You could get a mention on Africa Link, which broadcasts live on Facebook. That's DW Africa.
And yes, we are going to give you a mention just as you heard there. Wamtola Mba is writing and saying, what a shock. Someone fleeing from Nigeria to Cameroon must be the real-life example of the proverbial frying pan to fire. And we have many more comments there. Keep writing to us and tell us what you think. And remember, share this audio.
Africa Link. Sport.
Well, you heard it right. It's now time for our sports update. As most of you know, Bayern Munich are back on top of the Bundesliga after a 5-0 thumping of title rivals Borussia Dortmund.
You sound very happy saying that, Eunice. Well,
not really, but
they're now leading on 64 points, one ahead of Borussia Dortmund. In Africa, focus on the CAF Champions League. Here is Samson O'Malley with more from the continent.
Thank you, Zipporah and Eunice. Let's kick off with the CAF Champions League, which witnessed one of the heaviest upsets. Eight-time winners and defending champions Al Ahly of Egypt suffered a major blow, losing 5-0 to Mamelodi Sundowns of South Africa in a quarter-final match played in Pretoria. The Cairo Red Devils have been left with virtually no chance of the second leg to be played in Egypt next weekend. In Dar es Salaam, Siba SC of Tanzania were held 0-0 by five-time champions TP Mazembe from the Democratic Republic of Congo, while Horoe of Guinea played a 0-0 draw with Moroccan side Wydad Casablanca at the Stade du 28 September in Conakry. I talked to sport analysts here in Nigeria, Andrew Randa and Jeru Udo, on what they make out of the first leg quarterfinals result.
results.
I think the first major shock, major surprise was Al Ahly losing to Sundowns 5-0. I can't remember the last time Al Ahly were beaten that comprehensively.
It tells you that football is evolving in Africa, especially in South Africa. Club football in South Africa has really picked up over the years. A team like Al Ahly, the African team of the last century, going down by 5 unreplied goals, that tells you that football is really evolving. Of course, other results, Esperance as expected, 1 in Constantine in Algeria, 3-2. And of course, Horoya Oguniyi and Wydad Club playing out the goalless draw. So I'm not really shocked that these teams are getting very good results like this, and it's very, very tight. That tells you that any team that emerges this time definitely will be what is sought.
In athletics, Kenya's athletes proved their dominance in the sport by winning the IWF Gold and Silver Label Road Races competitions staged across Europe this weekend. Nancy Kiprop won the 36th annual Vienna City Marathon, breaking the women's course record by over a minute. She clocked 2 hours, 22 minutes, 12 seconds to set the new record. Kiprop led a Kenyan clean sweep of the podium, with all 3 women setting personal bests. Speaking after her victory, Kiprop said her victory did not come as a surprise.
Yeah, I felt so good. I had planned for it. I had planned to cross the first half with 70, and it really went a bit faster because I knew that the last course will be a bit tougher. So I wanted to run faster this one, and then I compensated that towards the end.
Elsewhere in Italy, Kenyan athletes beat bad weather conditions to win the 19th General Miliamo Marathon and IWF Silver Label Race. Titus Ikiru clocked 2 hours, 4 minutes, 46 seconds to smash his previous personal best by a minute and 3 seconds, which he set in Sevilla last year. The women's race was won by another Kenyan, Vivian Kiplagat. For fans of rugby, all eyes have been on the qualification for the 2019 World Rugby Under-20 Championship, which will be held in Brazil later in the year. The Kenya national team defied all the odds to stun Namibia 21-18 in a tightly contested match in Nairobi, earning a ticket to represent Kenya and Africa at the World Championship. The coach, Paul Odera, said they are set to represent the continent in Brazil.
I'm very pleased. This is the least time we've had to prepare with this particular age group. And for them to produce a performance where they score over 70 points, which is our highest score in 5 seasons, is fantastic.
Kenya's rugby coach Odera there, ending that report by Samson Omale. Many thanks.
Yeah, thank you very much. And just a reminder of our top story today. President Paul Kagame has reiterated that he will not tolerate any threats, whether international or regional, to destabilize his country. His remarks came hot on the heels of yet another stern warning he made during the 25th commemoration of the genocide against the Tutsi. And we've been having lots of reactions and feedback on that, because we did ask, do you think the international community learned any lessons from the Rwandan genocide?
Yes, here someone called Ngwa Nefinji is saying no, because there is genocide currently going on in British South and Cameroon, and the international community is aware of it and watching.
And there's one very angry reaction here from Jack Amber. He's saying the so-called international organizations and community are useless. And he goes on to say that they're just NGOs who make money and develop the economies under the umbrella of ensuring peace and security in the world. Remember, that does not reflect our opinion. It is, of course, your comments and feedback.
Thank you so much. And make sure to keep those comments coming. Keep the debate going on our Facebook page, DW Africa. Now, in other news, Nigeria has suspended mining activities in the troubled region of Zamfara due to what the government said it had established a strong and glaring nexus between the armed bandits and illicit miners. Bandits have long been a scourge of rural communities in Zamfara, raiding villages, stealing cattle, burning homes, looting food, and much more, you know. So we asked the question on our Facebook page, what do you make of this decision by Nigeria? And Kenneth Okoth is saying, nobody knew there was gold in Zamfara until now. It's a wicked government.
Really?
Strong comment there.
I don't know if everyone didn't know that. And there is one person there writing to us, Kindoya Bagura, is saying, what was the government doing to stop these so-called armed bandits?
And another here from Chukwu Nonso is saying, gold in the northern Nigeria belongs only to the north, while crude oil and gas deposit in the southern part belongs to entire Nigeria.
Eunice, what I like is that most of these comments and feedback is actually coming from Nigerians themselves. For example, we have Mohammed Rabu, who says, I hope the illicit miners and the bandits will not relocate to Alawa village in Shiroro, that is in Niger State in Nigeria, because many illegal mining and kidnappings are taking place there.
Thank you so much for your comments. It was glad to have you on board. My name is Eunice Wanjiro.
And I'm Zipporah Nyambura.
Bye for now.
DW. Made for Minds.